Hello, I'm Charlotte Armitage and this is Objects.
On this episode, I'm speaking to Carmel Jacobs. Carmel was brought up by her gran in Edinburgh. As a child, Carmel developed a love for wrestling, something her gran supported every step of the way. For Carmel, wrestling was a form of escapism, something that she could use to conquer the world. In school, Carmel was able to travel the world through wrestling and performing with people she calls her family. As her career progressed, Carmel became known as the Pipe Bomb Princess. Her blunt, no-nonsense approach made it clear to her opponents that they should expect the fight of their lives. This saw her become the ICW's Women's Champion and the first inductee of the ICW Hall of Fame. Carmel's unpredictable and determined approach didn't end with her wrestling career. She swapped her wrestling boots for university books, training as an educational psychologist, where she now supports care experienced children and young people to navigate the same care system she too experienced. My first interaction with Carmel was tuning in to listen to her speak at the Global Care Gathering, where she gave the most remarkable speech, Here's to the Care Experienced Ones. As a young care experienced woman, I'm endlessly inspired by Carmel and all that she does. Carmel, thank you so much for joining me on Objects.
Thank you for having me, Charlotte.
So some of our guests still know you from your wrestling days, but for those that don't know you, can you tell me a little bit about yourself?
I think you've pretty much summed it up in a sentence for me. I'm currently working as an educational psychologist, but prior to that I spent 12 years of my life training and performing as a professional wrestler. So that was my alter ego. I've now moved on into my more corporate self. I'm a care experienced professional working to support the outcomes for care experienced young people. It's something I'm hugely passionate about, which is what drove me to let go of my former passion, which was beating people up inside a wrestling ring.
So before we go on to hearing all about your chosen objects, I just want to ask you a wee bit about the process before. How was it finding them? Did you know what they were straight away? How quickly did they come to you?
I found it really, really difficult. I don't know if that's just because I had to pick only three. I know that a lot of people who've had a journey through care may have the complete opposite experience, because for them they may not have a lot of objects. For me, partly because I'm a massive hoarder and I attach sentimental value to almost anything. I mean, my husband and I, my God, have been together for 10 years now and I've still got our first cinema ticket. Like, that is how ridiculous I am. So for me, there were so many things that jumped into my head, and then trying to break it down into those three periods of time, especially because in many ways I feel like they've all run into each other and I don't necessarily know the kind of cut off for each stage. And it was about obviously wanting to pay respect to certain people who were a big part of that journey in a very positive way for me, whilst also paying homage to who I am as a person because of what I've experienced. So yeah, it was really, really difficult for me, and I must admit this morning at the very last minute I changed my objects. So that just goes to show how difficult it was. Yeah, because there's a lot of emotion attached to a lot of things that I have. Trying to think of one thing over the other was really, really difficult. And it was also opening a bit of a gate, because I think quite often we compartmentalise different parts of our life. And I certainly do a lot of that in my, you know, day-to-day job. I have to compartmentalise a lot of my personal experiences. So I'm used to just having these things boxed up and actually being asked, I want you to go out there and think about your care journey from beginning right through to end, or through to where you are now, and pick things that are meaningful. It was a therapeutic process in both good and bad ways.
Okay. So I think on that note, it's time for your first object, which represents before care. Can you tell me what your object is?
Okay, so this was one of the humming and hawing ones, but I ultimately went with poem that is on a piece of card I can't even remember when I was given this, but I was given this by my gran. It's something that I've always had throughout my childhood, you know, from before I could even read the words. It was a poem that I had in my bedroom that means an awful lot to me. The poem's, well, it says on this piece of card, it's called Don't Give Up, but I've always known it to be called Don't Quit. And it's just something that, you know, as soon as I got interested in, like, reading and writing and all those things, this was one of the first poems that, like, I learned off by heart, and I used to recite it and almost perform it. It's always given me a lot of encouragement when I've found things difficult. It's a poem that I've always gone back to and read over. As an adult, I've got a tattoo of my favourite lines from this poem around my ribs, so it felt, when I was choosing the first object, as something that's been a part of my life and been a great source of strength throughout my life, that represents the most important person in my life and the most important person who was a part of my care journey. This had to be the object that I picked.
And how does this symbolise before care for you?
I think it symbolises more than before care. I think for me, you know, the message of the poem is about not giving up when things go wrong. And that kind of normalisation of, in life, bad things are going to happen. I was very, very young when I went to, well, I was 3 years old when I went to live with my gran. And always had that sense of things being different for me and my life not being the same as other people, and kind of growing up knowing that things would never be the same for me as they were for other friends in my friendship group, and knowing that I would never have that kind of nuclear family or that normal life, and also having that realisation that actually when things are really good, something can happen just like that, that, you know, whips the rug from under your feet. I had this poem as a kind of narrative in my head before any of that stuff happened, and it gave me that resilience to deal with the downs and to deal with the shockers in life, and it's just something that I've always looked back to for that source of strength. It was difficult, again going back to what I was saying at the beginning, to pin things within periods of time. This is something that doesn't just represent my life before care, but it kind of is the building blocks of me as a person, that whole don't give up mentality. You know, I've spoken quite a lot with care experience people that I know through being part of that community, and the one thing we always talk about is that inner resilience that you have through experiencing early hardship and through experiencing some of the things that people experience throughout their time in care. And for me, those kind of building blocks of being able to manage all that and, you know, stay strong despite all of that comes from just really solid foundations of understanding that life isn't just this picture perfect experience for everyone, but that some of those things that happen that rock you to the core also give you this strength that can make you stand out amongst other people who have maybe not experienced that, and that's something that I hold close to my heart.
So you said you were only in care, you went into care at quite a young age. Do you think that period before care, you probably don't remember much of it, but do you think that's had an impact on you now where you are for the rest of your life?
I think certainly, you know, knowing what I, as a psychologist, knowing what I know in terms of like those attachments that you build within the first 3 years of your life and how critical those attachments and experiences are, and how much of a feature certain memories from that period of time have been on my adult life, I think we do a lot of making assumptions about how things that have happened in the early years to not just myself but to any child are going to affect them in their adult life. We're getting more and more of an understanding around that now. I certainly know through my own experience that what happened in that period has had a lifelong impact on my life. It's something that I think about every day. You know, my mother, for example, was a very good mum. She was very young when she had me, and it was a very traumatic accident that we were both involved with, but meant she could no longer care for me. And that is something that I have always struggled with. And I think fundamentally, you know, growing up, not having that person to call mum or dad and not feeling as though you are that someone's number one is something that we we can relate to, and it's something that's really challenging to understand. And I think even now, you know, my understanding of that and my processing of that has changed as I've got older, and I've gone through different phases of it. I think as a kid it was like, right, okay, this isn't my experience and this isn't my upbringing, but what I've got is really, really good, and I'm really, really lucky to have what I have. And then you go through that period of feeling quite frustrated. Well, you know, why does this person have a mum and a dad and a brother and sister, and why won't I ever get to experience that? And that can become a bit of a source of like anger, you know. And then there's that, well, I'm going to do good despite all of those things. And then ultimately where I'm at now is that understanding of everything that has happened throughout my life has made me the person that I am today, for good or for bad, and there are bits of that that I choose not to think about all too much because it wouldn't be helpful to do so. But there are also bits of that that I use to drive me and guide me, and I recognise that had I not experienced all those things, I wouldn't be doing necessarily what I'm doing now. And ultimately, a lot of it comes back to the message of this poem that, you know, my gran has ensured was a part of my life growing up. And even when my gran passed away, I remember going through the stuff in the house, and it wasn't as if, like, this poem's always been part of my life and I've always had it and I've always kind of had it in my head. But there was a point where I couldn't have told you where it was. And I remember going through my kind of drawers in what was my childhood home and coming across this poem and actually just bursting into almost happy tears because of all the memories that it brought back. And just, again, that message of today's dark, but tomorrow might not be so dark. And either way, there are things, despite anything, that I'm going to make sure I get myself excited about and that I'm going to put my positive energy into despite anything life throws at me.
That's amazing. So you very briefly touched on living with your gran, and we know that is kinship care. So I think that leads us quite nicely on to your second object, which represents during care. Do you want to tell us what your object is?
So I felt that I had to bring something that represented my wrestling career for my period of time during care. I think for me, wrestling, when I can't remember a time in my life where I didn't watch wrestling. You know, from being a toddler, I used to rock in my chair to the Rockers and get scared of the Undertaker's music. It was a massive form of escapism for me as a child. That turned into this dream that I had growing up. You know, I was going to be the first ever female WWF champion. Like, that's how high I set the standard for myself. I was going to conquer the world through wrestling. It was the one thing that when I felt lonely or scared, or, you know, when I was worried about something happening to my gran and being completely alone, like, wrestling I could put on the telly, and it just took me away from all of that. And then the other aspect of that was just, I feel like my wrestling career is a symbol of how incredible my gran was throughout my care journey. When you've got a 7, 8, 9, 10 going right up to my 20s granddaughter telling you that she wants to be a professional wrestler and that's what she wants to do with her life, and you accept that, and not only accept it but support it, and you tell her, well, if that's what you want to do, I believe that you can do anything that you want to do, then that is something really magical that fueled me not only to go on to be a professional wrestler but also to go on to do the other things that I've done in my life since then. Just that narrative of, if you want to do something, you can absolutely go ahead and do it. And obviously there's a bit of being realistic around that, but finding what that means for you and finding the way to get that sense of achievement through whatever it is you're passionate about is really, really important. Wrestling pulled me out of my darkest days throughout my time in care. It gave me something to look forward to. It gave me something to aspire to. It gave me this alter ego to express, I guess, what was at the time a bit of like inner trauma and frustration and anger. And I did it in a really safe way through the character that I developed in wrestling. And it also gave me a sense of community and a sense of belonging. I travelled all over Europe with my wrestling, performing with people that I grew up with through the training school, and we were very much a family, you know. And in Scotland, that started off really, really small. There was only a couple of us girls, and not that many more boys that were on the scene and that were regularly performing on shows. And just feeling that sense of like camaraderie, like we're in this together, and let's make a name for ourselves together, and let's travel the country and show them what we've got to offer. It was a time in my life where I got that kind of first sense of belonging to something bigger and having that kind of real family connection. And yeah, for me, that was absolutely huge. And I think the skills and the learning that I gained through my time in that business, I will carry for the rest of my life.
I think it's really interesting. You spoke about wanting brothers and sisters, and then you go on to wrestling and you gained that from something completely different. You found that family setting from something completely different. Do you think this wrestling career, do you think that's it completely finished with, or do you think you'll revisit it?
That's a good question, and a weighted question. I massively miss it. I don't think I realised quite at the time how much I would miss it. I chose to stop wrestling in 2016. I'd had a couple of injuries and I was due to be starting my master's course, and I didn't feasibly see a way that I could continue to do both. And I made like a really rushed decision. We had a show booked at the Hydro. I was going in as the ICW Women's Champion, which was something that I was immensely proud of. And for me, it was, if this is as high as it's going to get for me, then I'm really, really happy at what I've achieved. And actually, I don't want to just hang on to this for another 6 months, a year, 2 years' time and have to bow out on a smaller show where I'm not in as good shape and I'm not able to perform to the best of my ability. So I chose to end it there and then. I didn't tell anyone really ahead of doing that. I just had my match and then said on the microphone at the end that that was my last match. And then the owner of ICW contacted me asking me if I wanted to be inducted into the Hall of Fame in the January. And for me, that was hugely significant because I'd quit wrestling in the October and my gran had passed away in the December. And I always remember thinking how worried that she used to get every single weekend when I had shows, especially if I was travelling far. It used to always be, phone me as soon as your match is done and let me know you're okay. And she used to always ask me if I had any bruises, and most of the time I'd have to lie to her and say, no, I'm fine, and I'd be sitting there with a bloody nose or whatever. And I just remember thinking that I'm so glad that, you know, when she died, that she knew that I was safe and that I'd given up on that, because I'd had quite a few injuries and because it wasn't necessarily good for me anymore to be committing so much time and so much focus to something that I wasn't at that point getting very much out of. I felt that everything kind of worked out well, and when I closed that chapter of my life, if you'd asked me at the start of 2017, even at the end of 2017, if I felt I'd ever go back there, I would have said to you absolutely categorically no. But I don't know. I mean, now I would say never. I've not found anything that has given me that oomph the same way that wrestling does. Like, I thought I'd be able to put my passions into something else and still feel that sense of satisfaction. I thought I'd find something else that would give me that feeling of just being able to completely and utterly escape the world for 10 minutes, 20 minutes and give you that huge adrenaline rush. And I'm yet to find it. I don't think going back to wrestling would be necessarily the best thing for me, but I am keen to find something that gives me that same
drive. Sounds like wrestling really strengthened your relationship between you and your gran. It sounds like throughout your care journey you said that your gran supported you all the way alongside your wrestling career, and it sounds at the end quite symbolic actually that when you finished that happened, and now you're like, actually, I could go back.
Yeah, so when you think of it like that. Yeah, I don't think my gran would have ever exhaled if I was still going out and getting my ass kicked every weekend. Because whilst she was always so supportive, I mean, to the point that she'd stitch up my gear, she'd do my spray tan for me. As I said, she'd phone me every match. She never once was able to come and watch me wrestle because it caused her so much anxiety. And I think, again, that's a credit to just how much she loved and supported me, was, you know, this is difficult for me, but I know how good it is for you. So I'll take a safe distance and support from the sidelines. But yeah, it is, I think it was symbolic for me almost when I lost my gran. It was that feeling of like emptiness that I think you get with any bereavement. And I'm glad that at the time I didn't respond by just being like, right, well, I'm going to fill that gap by going back to wrestling full time, because that would have been, that would have taken away from everything else I was doing at the time. And the decision I made to stop was a very valid and reasoned and thought through decision. It was never going to be an easy one, because I'm so emotionally attached to everything that I experienced during that time. But I felt at the time it was a decision that I had to make. I feel since, having experienced different things since, and having, it's been since leaving wrestling that I've really thought about my life, and not just leaving wrestling, but since losing my gran, that I've really reflected on like my identity as a care experience person, and I've become involved with Who Cares Scotland, and I've done all those things, and I've really unpicked who I am as a person and the different things throughout my life that have made me who I am, and I've, you know, gone places in my head that I thought I'd like locked off and put away forever. And it's been through taking that kind of therapeutic journey that I've thought, well, there never has to be a cut off for the things that you enjoy in life. You know, if you find something that you're passionate about and that gives you a sense of satisfaction, then you should absolutely do it. I don't know if wrestling's still that for me, but it's certainly not something that I would turn my nose up at.
So what impact do you think this period of your life being looked after has had on you now?
I think it has given me drive. I also think it's made me a highly anxious person. but I think it's, you know, in terms of the positive impact, and I'd like to focus on that, because I think sometimes it's easier to focus on the negative parts of things. I think it's shown me that having someone that believes in you, no matter who that is, and that person can sometimes come in the strangest of forms, can absolutely be a difference maker in your life. I think it's taught me a lot about who I am as a person. But, you know, ultimately, you don't end up in the situation of being care experienced without having had those negative experiences that undeniably will still be impacting on me when I'm a mother or a grandmother. You know, that kind of anxiety around losing people that you love, that anxiety around finding happiness and finally feeling content, and then something happens that just whips it all away from you, that kind of feeling of, I can never truly allow myself to enjoy this moment because this moment might be gone in a second. You know, all those things are aspects of my character that I have to continue to work through. And, you know, they've all stemmed from my experience before and during care. And they will be a feature of my experience beyond care and the rest of my life. It's just about how much focus I allow them to have. You know, my care identity is a part of me, and it's a part of me that I'm hugely proud of. I'm proud of being able to get to where I am despite some of the things that I've had to deal with. But I'm also aware of the fact that I can't continue to just compartmentalise all the negative things, you know, as an adult, now that I'm in a stable relationship with my husband. Like, it's a good time for me to kind of review those things and get better at processing those things, so that when I go on to have children, which hopefully I do in the not so distant future, I can make sure that the anxieties I have don't get passed on to, or aren't reflected in the way that I bring them up.
So you spoke a wee bit about your husband and a lot about where you are now, and I think that would lead us really nicely on to your final object, your third and final object, which represents where you are now, after care, I guess. What is your final object, Carmel?
So my final object was the one that I was 100% sure on from the moment you spoke to me about doing this, and that was my wedding ring. that for me is a symbol of how I want to look forward. For me, a big part of my care experience was that feeling of loneliness, in terms of not feeling like you're part of this family, and just almost like craving having that nuclear family. And for me, it was almost a double-edged sword, because I love my gran so much and I appreciated everything she did for me. And, you know, there were external members of my family that were there too, that I really appreciated and loved and got support from and strength from. But in your own head, there is still that feeling of difference, and there's still that feeling of isolation, and that feeling of, am I ever going to know what it feels like to be part of a family? And I know that families come in different shapes and sizes, and I'm not one for advocating that the nuclear family is the way forward, but I am so happy to say that from, you know, the moment I met Liam to the moment that we got married, I felt that sense of like unconditional connection and that sense of safety to another person. You know, I met someone that I could completely and utterly be myself with, like no holding back anything. He knows every single aspect of my crazy personality and he accepts all of it, and ultimately I trust him, and I trust that he's not going to leave me, which I think is huge to say when you've had other people close to you that have. And I wanted to choose my wedding ring because I think it symbolises my hope for the future. For us, it wouldn't have mattered whether we got married or not to make that a symbol. We decided to get married. My gran had passed away on Christmas Eve, and the following year we were really struggling with the whole concept of celebrating Christmas. It was like, this is just not something that we want even on our radar. And then we decided about 3 weeks before Christmas, why don't we just get married? And then literally registered ourselves, and 3 weeks later we got married in the town hall where Liam's mum and dad had got married many years prior. And then we had a big party back at what was my gran's house, and it was absolutely incredible. It was just done completely on a whim. It was an open invitation to our closest friends saying, you know, we're doing this, we know it's last minute, if you want to come, come, if you don't, we're not going to be offended. And it was hands down the best day of my life. And I think a lot of it is because we did it on such a small scale. I actually got to spend my wedding day with my husband, and it meant so, so much. And I didn't think being married would mean that much to me. But as soon as that was kind of our relationship of 10 years was made official, so to speak, I finally felt like I'm not alone in this world anymore. Like, I have this man next to me who I love with all my heart, who is going to fight all my battles with me, and who, if I'm feeling scared or lost or lonely, will absolutely have my back every single step of the way. And it's that kind of excitement now that I've got about, well, we've got our two Labradors already, who are our children at the moment, our practice babies.
And dog mom.
Yes. So we've already started our little family, and I hope that we continue to grow that. I don't know if Liam will be happy with me getting another dog, but I hope we continue to grow that with little human children at some point in the not so distant future. And that's something that makes me excited.
You spoke about your relationship with your husband and your hopes for the future and your family, but you've also got a really amazing career. And for a care experienced person to have a career like yours is really inspiring. I'd love to hear more about that.
Yeah, so I'm an educational psychologist. For me, that sounds crazy, because growing up I didn't really enjoy formal education, and I couldn't imagine myself ever being part of that system almost. But what I did enjoy was learning. I was hugely passionate about learning, you know, whether it was watching documentaries or reading random books about different things. I was an avid reader as a kid. I just didn't necessarily know how to transfer that to the context of a classroom where you have to pay attention and be respectful to the adults in the room and all that jazz. So throughout my life I've kind of engaged and then disengaged with education. And I can't even remember what really happened between me dropping out of high school at 16 and lying to my gran to say that I was dropping out because I had a job and I didn't have a job, and I used to leave the house every morning and get a bus to Princess Street Gardens and just sit in the gardens and then come back home and be like, oh, I've been working all day, like, I'm so tired. Like, and then I ran out of bus fare, so I couldn't keep doing that, so I actually had to get a job. And it was, like, I don't know whether it was that that kind of motivated me to, like, try to find something that I was passionate about. And ultimately it just kept coming back to the fact that I really like learning, but I just don't like the learning environment. So what can I do that's in relation to that? And as an educational psychologist, it's all about addressing those barriers to learning. You know, whether you're a child or young person who's got an identified additional support need, and that would include being care experienced and all those circumstantial things that affect your ability to access school and to learn. And our job is about advocating for that child and using our expertise to ensure that they are given the best possible chance to realise their potential. And it's something that I am, once I found it, I was like, this is it. This is what I want to do. This is absolutely what I need to do. And I'm only just coming to the end of my probationary year, so I'm I'm brand new into the career, but I'm absolutely loving it. It's given me that kind of motivation. I think for me, I need something in my life, and whether it was the wrestling or my current career, I need something that's like hooked me. I need something that keeps me occupied and keeps my brain busy and keeps me motivated and makes me want to get out of bed every morning because I've got this really important thing that I need to do. I didn't expect at any point that I would find that in a kind of formalised career. I just didn't expect to find that, and I absolutely have in educational psychology. And I'm really excited to see where I can take things moving forward. I don't know what else to say.
So reflecting back through these three objects you've been through, your before, during and now after, Ciara, is there anything that you wish you had at any of these stages?
I think someone to explain... It was difficult for, obviously I'm 31 years old now. I still get ID'd for Red Bull, which is insane. in my local premier too, you'd think they'd know me by now. But I think for me, when I was in school, we didn't necessarily know what we know now. You know, we didn't know about the impact of early trauma. We didn't necessarily know about, you know, all the neurological things that can happen when a child has experienced neglect or hardship or adversity, or when a child doesn't have a secure base or loses a really strong attachment figure. We didn't know much of that when I was in school. And, you know, we just educated kids on what was the nuclear family. So we were kind of presented this idea of this is what is normal. And if you don't kind of fall into this, then you're not normal. And no one was really kind of checking in to see how you were processing that. And I think for me, the challenge of having to process all of that in my own head, you know, for most part at an age where I didn't really understand what had happened that had brought me to that position, and where I had so many questions but I didn't want to necessarily ask people and upset people or make people feel scared that I wasn't okay, I think I would have hugely benefited from what we know now. And I think it's really important now, and again, another reason I wanted to be an educational psychologist is to kind of drive the narrative around this and change the kind of way people that approach this. A lot of people leave it to someone else. You know, it's not my responsibility to check in on that young person. It's not my responsibility to make sure that they're okay or to ask them if they're okay, or I don't want to ask them if they're okay in case it opens up this whole other thing. But actually, every interaction that you have with a child or young person is hugely, hugely important. And I remember so many supportive interactions from being a child that have helped me kind of hang on when I've thought about quitting everything. But at the same time, I remember those not so attuned interactions where I almost felt like what I'd experienced was getting either forgotten about, overlooked, or didn't matter. And I think looking back now, I wish I'd had the confidence to say at different stages throughout my life, I'm really struggling to understand who I am, what's happened, where I'm going with this. I think it would have saved me a lot of turmoil as an adult had I broached certain things a little bit sooner. That's not to take away from anything all those adults around me did at that time, but it's certainly something that I wish I'd accessed more of at an earlier stage, as opposed to trying to unpick everything now when I'm old.
You're not.
But I do believe that, like, and I see it happening more and more, and it needs to continue to happen and happen more. You know, we are talking about mental health. We are talking about the impact of early experiences. We are talking about the care system and how it needs to be improved, and how children and young people whose parents can't look after them without support or at all need more support to make sure that they realise their potential. And we are taking that kind of more informed approach. And I want to be part of that, and I hope that that continues. And I know 100% that it would have benefited me as a young child had certain things been acknowledged and named.
So we're coming to the end of our episode together. I think you rounded it up quite nicely, actually, saying you wanted to be involved, and you are involved being part of this podcast. So the last question that I've got for you is that now that you've been on Objects and you've explored your care journey through Objects, what would you say to other care experienced people who would be interested in being a guest of Objects?
I would say absolutely do it. It's actually been a really therapeutic experience and a really positive experience, and I've really enjoyed it. And, you know, it's not necessarily been about the things, it's been about the feelings that I've attached to those things that sometimes I don't attend enough. So it's been really positive, and I'd recommend anyone who gets the opportunity to take part to go for it.
Thank you, Carmel, for sharing your Objects. It's been really lovely to listen to you.
Thank you, Charlotte.